everybody. Hi there. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me today. I've been telling you that I've been in California for a while. I'm still here. For those of you who don't know, I'm normally in New York City. That's where I live. But for the last few years, we've been coming out to California around this time, and it's great to be able to travel around and check out the vegan scene on the left coast and visit some of my favorite eateries, which I've been taking a lot of advantage of. Okay, so I'm very, very excited and looking forward to the next half hour because we have a wonderful guest with us. And if you don't know her, you're going to find out how many people she has touched and influenced in such a positive way when it comes to veganism and nutrition. My guest is Jo Stepaniak, and she is an author and a co-author of more than 24 books on vegan cuisine, health, and compassionate living. Today we're going to focus on IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, which she has struggled with for decades, and she knows what it's like to feel that no food is safe even when eating healthy vegan fare. And as a result, we have her beautiful new book, Low FODMAP and Vegan. Welcome, Jo. How are you today?
I'm fine, Karen. How are you?
It's a beautiful day here. I am just bouncing off the walls. I'm feeling really exceptionally good today. I wanted to tell you, the last time I spoke with you was 7 years ago. You were one of my very first guests on this program, It's All About Food, and I'm very grateful for that. You gave us a very informative interview, and since that time here on the Progressive Radio Network, now in its seventh year, this program, we have a great following, a wonderful audience that has grown significantly, and I've learned so much hosting this program, just talking to so many wonderful people like yourself.
Oh,
so it's good to be able to talk to you again.
I feel the same way.
Now, I want to talk about this book that you've written, and but before we get to that, the bio that I read about you is really very, very small and compact, and you've done so many wonderful things for this movement. You were elected to the Vegetarian Hall of Fame in 2008, and so many other things. You've edited many books and guided many other people in writing their own books, and you've been a vegan for decades. The thing that amazes me is that I look at many cookbooks, as I know that you do, but you were really one of the founding people who have guided us with so many great recipes. And I don't even know that people really realize that when they're seeing some of the new cookbooks come out, that you were part of our foundation.
Thank you. I appreciate that. My books have been around for a long time, and I think I'm honored to think that perhaps some of the newer authors have used my recipes as foundations and jumping off points for their innovative ideas. So thanks, I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome. And, you know, it can be frustrating sometimes, I don't know, because as the decades go on, some of the younger generations don't really realize how they got to where they are today. Things were harder decades ago.
Oh, is that true? That is so true. And I imagine that they get tired of us older folks talking about how hard it was way back when, but it was, and we didn't have all the advantages and all the products and all the prepared foods and all the information, including the web, decades ago. So things are quite different now, and it's amazing how much progress has been made so quickly.
Exactly. Now, the thing that I was surprised to find out is that you've struggled with IBS for a while. So
yes,
let's jump in and talk about that.
Yes. It's been actually quite a very long time that I have. And when I became vegan, which was, I don't want to say. It's been ages ago. longer than many vegans have, new vegans have been on the planet. But I had expected to feel better. And I think that most people, when they turn to a vegan diet and a vegan lifestyle, they do expect to feel better. And when they don't, they can be extremely disappointed. And it's hard to find support because most people actually have the opposite effect. They usually do feel that their health has improved, they've lost weight, their energy has risen when they take on a vegan diet. But for those of us, when that doesn't happen, it's hard to find support, and it's hard to tell other vegans that you don't feel good and you don't know why. And when you do, everybody has an answer. Everybody will tell you what you're doing wrong.
Yeah. Now, did you have trouble before you became a vegan?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You were very young when that happened.
Yes. Well, I had been a vegetarian before I became vegan, so I had been having a pretty helpful diet, especially compared to most people, for a long time. But when you have IBS, first of all, there's no structural damage to your intestinal tract. And it is very difficult and frustrating for physicians and the mainstream medical community to figure out what's wrong. And only recently has IBS been in the news and getting more attention. The low FODMAP diet in general, which is not geared towards vegans and is what makes this book unique, has been getting a significant amount of attention in the media recently, and that's awesome.
Now, can you tell us about the acronym FODMAP, what that means?
Okay. It is a group of difficult to digest carbohydrates. And everybody, to some degree or another, has difficulty with these particular carbohydrates in foods. The word FODMAP is an acronym it's words that most people won't know and won't relate to, so it's just easier to say FODMAP. It stands for the types of carbohydrates that are problematic for many people with IBS. And just like cholesterol is only found in animal products, FODMAPs are almost always only found in plant foods. There is lactose, which is found obviously in animal milk, and that is one of the FODMAPs. But all the others are found in plant foods.
Okay.
That's what makes being a vegan with IBS so very challenging.
Well, the other thing about all of that is, we know in terms of most chronic diseases that plant foods are beneficial. Especially for heart disease and diabetes, a high-fiber plant food diet is what boosts our immune system and lowers our risk. And yet for most people that discover they have irritable bowel syndrome, they're told not to consume fiber and they avoid vegetables and plants, the things that are beneficial. And I've always found for all diseases or all illnesses except this, plant foods tend to be the obvious answer to give you immediate relief, and yet this particular illness seems to go against that in some ways.
Well, in some ways it does. The problem is that the way that IBS works and the way that these short-chain carbohydrates work is that they ferment in our digestive tract. And depending on the type of IBS you have, these carbohydrates can go quickly through your digestive tract, or they can sit and ferment, or they can simply irritate the digestive tract and cause other problems such as bloating and gas and pain and all the things that nobody really wants to ever talk about in social settings. But the key to managing a vegan diet with IBS is to learn which foods are safe for you and which ones aren't. And so basically the low FODMAP diet is an elimination diet to start with. So it can help people with IBS pinpoint their trigger foods. And that way you don't have to eliminate everything for the rest of your life. You just have to find the foods that are specifically problematic for you. And you don't even have to totally eliminate those. Having a low FODMAP diet is about learning the portion size and frequency that you can have certain foods. So you might be able to have a tablespoon of legumes, but you might not be able to have much more than that. So it's really sort of a learning process about what works for you. But the problem in the past has been we haven't been able to figure out what our triggers are. So most people with IBS, particularly vegans with IBS, have been afraid of food totally because we can't figure out what it is that's causing our problems. And there are so many foods that do.
Yeah, this elimination diet that you spoke about I think is really important. The medical community wants to find one fix for a specific ailment. And this is where we discover we're all unique. And in many ways, not just with IBS, but many other illnesses, we're the best gauge to find out what's best for us. And very often an elimination diet, which can be a little challenging, but will let us know what works for each of us as an individual. And nobody else can do that.
Right. Well, the thing with the low FODMAP diet, and if somebody finds that they're sensitive to many, many foods, they can stick with the diet closely for a longer period. But usually people find that there are specific foods that cause them more problems than others. But like you said, everybody is different. And irritable bowel syndrome affects each person. In fact, all digestive issues affect each person uniquely. So there isn't a one-size-fits-all for everybody, unfortunately. I wish that there were. But there are certain foods that affect people more so than others, although, again, some people might not have any problem with those. But in particular, legumes, onions, and garlic are the big offenders.
This is fascinating to me, primarily because I'm a big fan of Dr. Joel Fuhrman, and he has some protocol for dealing with IBS, but his big thing is G-bombs, greens, beans,
right.
Onions, mushrooms, berries,
right.
And seeds.
Right, and a lot of those are high in FODMAPs. And just so listeners know that FODMAPs are real. These have been proven scientifically, test after test, to exist and to exacerbate symptoms of IBS. So, and a lot of times many of us want to feel that we're eating the best, most nutritious, most nutrient-dense diet possible. And so we might follow something like a nutritarian diet and we don't feel better. And in large part, that's because we're eating foods that are triggering our symptoms that are high in FODMAPs.
Have you made peace with your diet, Joe?
Am I at peace with it?
Yes. Are you at a good place with?
Well, it makes me laugh because IBS is unrelenting. And I would love to say I found the secret cure, but I haven't. I have found ways to manage, my symptoms as best as I can, but I still have good days and bad days. And
right.
I've accepted that that's just the way it's going to be. But on my good days, I will experiment more with some of the higher FODMAP foods. And when I'm not feeling good, then I go back to a more strict low FODMAP vegan diet.
Mm-hmm. What are your triggers?
Everything.
Oh,
it's just
amazing to me that you've created so many wonderful cookbooks, and yet there's been some challenges along the way.
Well, I think when people come to veganism because of ethics, you really want to make it work, and you want to do everything in your power, and you just keep trying everything. And I have tried everything. I have had IBS for an extremely long time, and I have tried every approach imaginable, from oil-free and nutritarian to raw to food combining, you name it, I have tried it. I've tried fasting. I've tried juicing. I have tried absolutely everything. And that's why it makes me laugh when people go, well, but have you tried this?
Yes.
And the answer is, yeah, I have. I wish that I had fewer triggers, but I can tolerate some things in moderation, some higher FODMAP foods on days when I'm feeling good. But there's really, right now, nobody knows exactly why people with irritable bowel syndrome feel better on some days and not on others, and why some foods are more tolerable on some days and not on others. It's difficult. That's what makes it so challenging and so frustrating for people who have it, because there currently are no answers. There's more being found out. There's more information in terms of physiological changes that are being detected that most of the medical community never thought existed. So that is creating opportunities for testing that allow people with IBS to get a diagnosis sooner and not have to travel from doctor to doctor to doctor getting nowhere. And then once they have this diagnosis, they can start taking action on their own, the personal steps that they need in terms of dietary changes, such as trying the low FODMAP diet, which has been effective for a large percentage of people with IBS.
Now, what about irritable bowel disease and Crohn's disease? I've often heard IBS lumped in with those other illnesses, and can you talk about them too? Because you don't really mention them.
Sure. Inflammatory bowel disease is different from irritable bowel syndrome in a number of ways, but symptomatically they can be very similar. There is structural damage to the intestines, depending on which type you have, whether you have Crohn's disease or you have ulcerative colitis, and that can be detected through examination. With irritable bowel syndrome, you can have an examination, such as a colonoscopy, and there will be no visible structural damage.
Mm.
These diseases, the IBD, the inflammatory bowel diseases, are progressive. And they also are very difficult to control. However, mild forms of IBD can be very similar to IBS in terms of symptoms. And people with severe IBS might even be more symptomatic and have more struggles with tasks of daily living than people with a very mild form of IBD. So right now, the very recent view of the gastrointestinal community, the physicians, is that digestive disorders are spectrum diseases, and so they can be all across the board, and regardless of which type you have, it can range from mild to severe.
I know that the drugs that they use for Crohn's disease, for example, can have tremendous side effects and also increase risk of cancer. So that's a very scary road to go down.
There really have been no good solutions and no headway into finding causes of IBD in the last 50 or more years. And the only solutions, which are pretty typical of the conventional medical community, have been new drugs. There have been really no ways to control, manage, and figure out the cause of inflammatory bowel disease. There's actually been a little more progress with irritable bowel syndrome than there has been with inflammatory bowel disease in the very recent years.
I've read about worms and about fecal
transplants.
What do they call it?
Yes, fecal transplants have been successful. They're not very appealing,
no.
But they have been successful with some people who have inflammatory bowel disease. They have not, as far as I know, been tried, at least not on any large scale, with people who have irritable bowel syndrome. And I can understand why, because our quality of life when you have IBS is deeply affected, but IBS does not progress. You don't have a risk of cancer, and you don't have a risk of IBS turning into IBD. IBS isn't life-threatening. So if we eat a food that is a trigger for us, the worst that happens is that we feel pretty rotten for several days.
Mm-hmm.
But with people who have IBD, their disease is progressive generally. Occasionally people do go into remission, and that's awesome, and that type of remission can last for some people for years, but that doesn't happen that frequently. And the disease can progress, and it can become life-threatening. It can require major surgeries. It's extremely serious in that regard.
So we've heard about IBS, and also we just briefly touched on Crohn's disease and IBD. Now let's go to the bright side and talk about your book and the recipes, because I like to say every time I've restricted my diet, going from an omnivore to a vegetarian, and a vegetarian to a vegan, and then a vegan to a raw vegan for a while, and every time I restrict foods, I discover a whole world of other plant foods that I never thought about trying. I'm not sure if it's the same with eating low FODMAP, but there are many, many foods that are safe.
Absolutely. That, you know, is true, and I've found that too. I find it kind of exciting to look for alternatives, and how can I satisfy my taste when I can't have certain things? And so that was the fun of creating the recipes for this book, to think about what I can't have, what isn't available commercially, and how can I create something to fill that gap. For instance, ketchup. People love ketchup. It's a wonderful condiment, but it contains onion and garlic. People love sriracha sauce. That's a fabulous condiment these days, but it contains tons of garlic.
Right.
So I came up with options for both of them that are, I think, equally tasty, incredibly easy to make, and delicious, and last a really long time in the refrigerator, which is important. You don't have to make them that often. I came up with a wonderful chili paste, herbal seasonings and spices, and all kinds of things to fill the gaps that are there when you have to restrict your diet, especially in terms of garlic and onion, which is, both of those are ubiquitous. They're in everything. If you go to any store and look at the prepared foods, the deli, I'm talking about vegan foods, the deli, the packaged foods, the frozen items, the veggie burgers, the cheese alternatives, you name it, they have onion and garlic in them. It is so difficult for people with IBS to find solutions that don't contain those two items if you're looking for a savory food. So I'm trying to come up with
the Jane. I'm thinking of the Jane cuisine where they don't believe in using onion and garlic. Is there any connection with IBS and the Janes?
Not that I'm aware of. Although Janes in general have, there's a movement to toward veganism, but Janes in general have used dairy products in the past.
Right.
So they don't get away with that one.
That's true. But I just wonder why they don't eat, what the real reason behind not eating onions and garlic from centuries ago.
From what I understand, and I am not Jane, but from what I understand in terms of the connection between not eating onion and certain strict Hindus and, for instance, the Hare Krishnas, they do not use onion and garlic either. And it's for spiritual reasons that they would probably be able to explain a whole lot better than I could. But... it has to do with sort of in making your mind work in a way that it shouldn't. That's not very spiritual in terms of how active it is. So I will let somebody from those those backgrounds explain that. But
Do you have in the cookbook some of your favorite go-to comfort foods that are safe?
Oh, I think they're all comfort foods because that's what I'm big into. And when you're not feeling good, you really do want something that's going to make you feel soothed and comforted and loved because you don't want to feel deprived.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to make everything high in flavor, soft and tender, just really appealing, whether you're feeling great or whether you're not. So, and there's all kinds of different types of recipes, too. I have a coconut curry. I've got Indian-style chard and potatoes and carrots and smoothies and short ribs, barbecue sauce, but all low in FODMAPs and all mild enough that they won't inflame a sensitive digestive system.
I'm very glad to see that kale and collard greens are on the safe list.
So was I. Two of my favorite foods. They're, you know, it's when it comes to low FODMAPs, dietitians are often saying, and physicians are often saying, that you really do need to have a dietitian guide you through the process so that you don't get any deficiencies in any nutrients. But we also hear that same thing when we become vegan. And people say, well, you're going to be missing out on so many nutrients. And what, though? Really? I have to ask myself, what? Because I look at what you can have on a low FODMAP vegan diet, and you can have a lot. But it's just knowing what. You can have, there are plenty of safe fruits, there are plenty of safe vegetables, there are safe nuts and seeds, and there are even a couple safe legumes in the right portion size. So there's really not a lot that we're missing out on in terms of nutrition, but it is a matter of understanding the portion that isn't usually a trigger for most people, finding out your specific triggers. But there's lots that we can have. The primary challenge is prepared foods and eating out. Those are the biggest hurdles.
Yeah, I understood that, and I was kind of, my heart was breaking for all people that are suffering from irritable bowel syndrome and living in this modern social world. the restaurants and prepared food manufacturers are getting better when it comes to all kinds of allergies and gluten and nuts and even labeling things vegan, but they're not there yet when it comes to onions and garlic. Oh, my goodness.
And I keep trying to reach out, but nobody seems to be listening right now. In Australia, where this research was conducted originally and where it's emanated from, they actually have a low FODMAP insignia for food products. Wow. Just like we have for vegan products, it's not the vegan insignia on foods, on food products here isn't really controlled by any one organization, but they do have that for low FODMAP foods in Australia, and it would be wonderful to have something like that here in the United States.
Okay, I'm sure it will come, and hopefully sooner than later. And thank you once again for leading the way with food with your latest book, your low FODMAP and vegan diet book.
Thank you, Karen.
Yes, thanks for joining me again, and feel good.
Thanks.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.